Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, is from 1986.
Yes.
So going into this, I knew
what
I
did you know about it?
Well, I knew whales. That was all I knew. I knew whales.
The one with the whales.
Movie. The one with the whales. I don't know exactly why I knew that, but I just knew it. I guess it's just one of those nerd pop culture things that somehow got to me.
There was the one with Khan, and there's the one with the whales, and those are the Star Trek movies people have heard of.
Yeah, and I knew both of those things. I also knew the characters, right? And I knew from what you had told me because I asked you.
And we watched Star Trek 2, so you've seen a Star Trek movie.
And I needed to know what was filled in the gap, right?
They searched for Spock and they found him.
So this movie was very confusing to me in a lot of ways. And I think it's because I didn't watch the one before, right? So like, I didn't know what happened to Spock.
Yeah, we did hear from somebody who said you should really watch Star Trek 3. And it's true, Star Trek 2, 3, and 4 all run together. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't want to assign you homework, and I didn't want to do Star Trek 3 for the
movies. I didn't want to watch two movies.
So, I mean, I could have summed it up a little bit. Basically, the Enterprise gets destroyed, and they steal a Klingon ship, and the Genesis planet blows up. But they find Spock's body, and they are able to put his mind back in his body because his mind has been hitching a ride with Dr. McCoy.
Yeah, that was confusing
since the end
for
of Star Trek 2.
I picked that part up, but when he mentioned that I have carried your soul, I was like, what happened in that previous movie?
Yeah, before Spock goes in to the death chamber, essentially, in Star Trek 2, he puts his hands on McCoy and says, remember, and that's the, you know, he's transferring his essence to McCoy in that moment before he sacrifices himself. So yeah, in the end though, they're like, they're on Vulcan and Spock is back but a little bit weird, and they have to go home and face judgment for all
terrorism.
The things that have happened. And in fact, at one point, yes, the angry Klingon ambassador in one of my favorite moments in Star Trek 4 decides to show them the two previous movies on a screen, like Federation's like, why don't you watch Star Trek 3 and then we'll talk. And they put up parts of Star Trek 3 on the screen. It's like, great. That was great. Thanks, Klingon ambassador, who's angry.
That moment, like that whole thing, it just proves to me that all space franchises eventually lead to political council debate. Like, they will all trend towards it eventually. There will always be confederations. There will always be debates. There will be procedures. There will be laws. There will be rules. And there will be judgments.
There'll be angry ambassadors who demand justice. Sure.
Did these movies have big budgets? I can't tell.
I would say, well, I don't think Star Trek movies after the first one ever really had a big budget until the J.J. Abrams one.
Mm.
They had mid-sized budgets, but not big ones. And I think it's very clear here that the decision to do a movie largely set in what was then the present day is a real budget saver, right?
Clever.
Major budget saver.
Can I just say about the premise of this movie? I have no idea how anybody came up with it, and I have no idea how it was agreed to, like how anybody accepted it. Now, this is not me saying that the movie is bad. I can maybe get to my thoughts about it in a minute, but just like, all right, so Earth is under siege from a probe, which is never really explained.
The serious alien probe that leaves as soon as they solve the problem, and we never hear about it again, and nobody knows where it came from or where it's going. Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Nope.
And the probe is trying to contact whales.
Whales.
And it can't find the whales, so it's sucking the water out of the planet trying to find the whales, which is destroying everything.
I guess, or it's punishing the people who live there for killing the whales. It's unclear. It is a sci-fi premise that's intended to make
it. But it's like a water-based attack, right? Because it's like messing up the atmosphere.
Yeah, so the clouds, and they've all used solar power now, so they can't survive if it's cloudy. So it's like clouds are the true villain here.
So
but it's
the
actually
only
we're
way
the true villain.
To fix it, because they're extinct, is to time travel back to the 21st century from the 23rd century.
To the 20th century.
20th century, sorry. To steal some whales.
Yes, and then bring them forward in time so that they can say, hey, we're here. We're okay. It's fine. Go away.
This is one of the most bizarre premises for a movie.
So what I would say is two things. First off, it's the mechanics to get to the fish out of water story, which is that, you know, our crew has to go back in time and navigate the 20th century in order to find
and
the whales and
literally
save the
take the fish out of the water.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. They're the fish out of the water, but then they have to take, but they're not fish either. And it's because they're mammals, as is explained in a scene later. They're not fish. That's a common misconception that is explained. It is a framing sequence in order to generate the plot, so it's a little bit silly. I will also say, you're right, I watch this movie and I think, who thought this was, like, who is like, yeah, that's a perfectly reasonable premise for a movie, because it's bananas. At the same time, I think it's very Star Trek, because the original Star Trek especially had so many strange episodes that were, because it was in the 60s, that were like, you know, like there was one with space hippies and stuff like that. Like there have been a lot of strange episodes. So I think in that way, it's actually kind of very Star Trek to say in this episode, in this movie, we save the whales. But yes, it is a time travel premise, you know, like how in Back to the Future, we have to set everything up in the present, but really in the end, it's just about the mechanics of getting him back to the past to have that story. I think that happens a lot with these time travel movies, is you have to sort of set it up to give your mm-hmm. characters a reason and a mission and a plan that puts them back in time. So yeah, that's the setup. I think that's the weakest part of the movie, is the setup and the frame on both sides of it, right? That the really it's all about seeing all the Star Trek people trying to figure out what it's like in 1986 San Francisco, and how you work and how money works and how buses work and things like that.
Yeah. And I will say, I'm sure this will make a lot of people upset. The whales thing it didn't work for me. It's super weird, and I really feel
what,
like
what that, the idea that, of the idea of saving the whales?
No,
the actual whales?
No. The idea of like the key is the whales is just like I couldn't get on board with it. Like,
well, okay, that's going to be a problem for this movie then, because you know, you do have to go with it. It's like they need to save the whales. This was really a thing, right? Like in the 80s, this was an environmentalist message, essentially, mm-hmm. that the whales are going to go extinct. And today, if they made this movie, it would be, I don't know, a rhino or something. There'd be a mm-hmm. rhino probe that came and tried to speak rhino, and they're like, oh no,
that's the problem. Like,
we don't have the rhinos anymore.
It's like, I appreciate the message. There was a lot of gruesome whale slaughter in this like images in this movie, right?
Yes.
Like there are a lot of positive messages about like environmentalism and like trying to stop the extinction of animals. I appreciate all of that, but like as a setup for a time travel mechanic in a space movie, it's like I don't know why we're here. Like why, who
we gotta save the
like,
whales.
What but like why though, like what alien was looking for the whales?
Yeah, I don't know, because it's I don't know, Star Trek, man.
It's too yeah. See,
also,
I think this
actually,
is the
my thing is, why don't you go back to when there were no people and there was just whales, and then beam up some whales and then go home?
But so here's the I need to understand, what is the time travel rules of Star Trek? Are there any established before this point?
Yes.
And what are like the general ideas? Because like I assume they spent an entire movie in the last movie like trying to make Spock good, but why couldn't they just go back in time and save Spock, right? Like what are the rules of time travel in the Star Trek universe?
Well, okay, the rules are it's time travel, it's a mess is basically it. But the idea I think the idea is you want to if you make a change back in time, it's going to have a horrible effect on the past, and so you don't want to do that. But in a lot of Star Trek, it ends up being that the things that they do actually cause history to happen as it was recorded. So there's a suggestion that
they make reference to that in a couple of points in this movie.
Yeah,
because
there's some original episodes about that. So the idea here, is that they're trying to. You can't just go back and save Spock, because that's not what happened, and you would change the entire flow of time. Here, what they're trying to do is just steal a couple of whales who are going to get harpooned anyway, as it turns out, and bring them forward. And yeah, they passed on a secret bit of scientific information to a guy.
And the glosses, right? It's like, oh, I'll get them back anyway.
Right, but they're creating a time loop, and those are all just kind of for jokes, because it's time travel. You can't, again, I don't think you can take it seriously. This is a wacky time travel movie involving mm-hmm. saving the whales.
Not trying to take it seriously at all. Like, my point of this is, like, it's my issue with the whales thing is not that, like, oh, this is ludicrous. It's just that, like, I couldn't attach myself to this as, like, a framing device for the entire movie.
Okay.
Like, it just didn't click for me, because it was like, this is too weird. And, like, maybe it's because I don't have enough base in this Star Trek, right? Which my understanding is campy and weird, right? Like, that this kind of band of crew, like in all of the TV show,
weird stuff happens.
I expect that, like, it's
I do think
too
it's
much.
A very Star Trek-y thing that alien whale probe. I will say, film audiences in 1986 did not have a problem with it. This was okay. The biggest box office hit of any of these Star Trek movies. It was a certifiable hit. So
could
everybody else was okay with it.
Wrath of Khan was good? Like,
Star Trek 3 came out and it did okay. No, it's because this was a word of mouth hit because it was funny and it was whales. It was considered more accessible than your average Star Trek movie because it was set in the present day and it had jokes.
It is funny, was entertaining. I didn't dislike this movie. Like, do not get me wrong. I'm not saying that I dislike this movie.
I get what you're saying, which is that for you, this premise seems so out of the blue and random and doesn't really connect with you. And I see, and that we have this, Scott McNulty and I do a podcast about the new Star Trek series that are rolling out on CBS All Access in the US. And every now and then we have a conversation that basically ends up being, this is a really ridiculous thing that they did, but it's very Star Trek-y. And I think that comes to the core of it, is that maybe we've internalized a little bit that Star Trek is not above completely bizarre scenarios and leaps. And you just kind of laugh and go with it because it's like, all right, it's Star Trek. I guess I won't spoil it too much, but in a recently aired Star Trek series, at one point, big flowers attack spaceships. And Scott and I were both like, yeah, Star Trek, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Flowers attacking spaceships, got it, right.
So I never watch any Star Trek TV, really. And my main, I'm very familiar with Star Trek as a franchise and its characters and like just from general pop culture, right? And I've watched most of the Abrams movies, right?
Sure.
But so I think like...
There's three, it's not that hard.
I've watched two of them though, right?
Like, okay, that's most of them.
So it's most
you
of
got
them.
It.
That's why I didn't say all of them or one of them. But so like, I just think that this premise is like too much of a jump for a cold viewer.
I would say, and this is coming out in the chat room too, I do think the idea of saving the whales and all of that, like it was easier to buy into this in the 80s. Whereas now we feel like, you know, we sort of saved the whales. The whales are going to be okay. They're still whaling and it's bad, but the whales are not the species that are going extinct. And I made the joke about the rhino probe. Again, that would be bizarre, but at least it would have that currency of like, oh, this is a topic. This is like a hot topic right now. And it's not now. So it seems that much more bizarre than it would maybe in 1986.
Because the idea of needing to save the whales is not like forefront in my mind.
Right, but it was a real thing in the 80s. Like there were all these discussions about how the humpback whales were going to go extinct because of whaling and all that, and there was an international movement to stop whaling and outlaw it. Now it is outlawed in most places and the whales have bounced back.
All right, that context helps make a little bit more sense
to me. It's not what I thought would stop you about this movie, but there we are.
Like, so the thing is, like, I think the thing that stopped me from, like, really enjoying this movie was that, and it was maybe lacking some of the context. Because, like, there are things that are happening, emotional things that are happening, that, like, I just don't know why they're happening.
There are a lot of Spock jokes that are about the fact that it was very sad that he died, and then they brought him back, but he's not quite right yet.
Like, I can't understand why exactly McCoy hates him so much. Like, really just, like, hates Spock.
McCoy... No, but he loves. Okay, again, he loves Spock, but they have an adversarial relationship. They enjoy jousting with one another. That's just a thing about them. I love McCoy because he's just so cranky. He's just a cranky man. And my favorite scene, I think, maybe in this entire movie, is the scene where they have the wacky hospital hijinks, where they have to get Chekhov out of the hospital, which has the wacky music. They're rolling. They have a fake patient. They're rolling down the hall. They got all this stuff that's going on. My favorite part of it, though, is that McCoy is aghast at 20th century medicine, and at one point just says, "This is like the Spanish Inquisition." To this, and he gives an old lady a pill that grows her a new kidney. That happens in passing. It's like, okay, I guess we're doing that now. And he said to doctors in a clean operating room, he's like, "This is barbaric." And then he puts his little sci-fi thing on Chekhov's forehead. Like, I love that because it allows McCoy to be peak crankiness, and because that I love that. I love that he's a grumpy guy.
Yeah, I enjoyed that scene, but it was just like really like jarring. And he was just like really taking pleasure in like any failure or potential failure that Spock could go through.
Yeah. Hey, Spock, we saved your life. Now you're back, jerk.
Yeah, it was really weird. Yeah. It was a very strange thing for me to try and come to grips with, because it was like I got the idea that he helped save his life, but then like seemed to really begrudge it, and it was like a very strange. Yeah. Oh, the animations in this movie. There is that moment when they do the time travel.
Isn't that bizarre? I think they want to get across that like time travel is weird and strange, and so there's this very strange, and there's a whale and there's like a mannequin, and you hear dialogue from later in the movie.
It's play because
it's like,
weird.
Oh, time travel is very strange. Yeah, that's there's a lot of weird stuff in this movie, but you know, then again, there's also like there's that section of the movie where they go to they have to sell his glasses, they get the money, they have to go on the bus, they don't have exact
Star
change.
Loves all that when he was like, will you guys break up, and they like can't do it, and they keep
don't know what
around
to do
pack.
They're it's just looking good. At each other, and Chekhov, who speaks with a Russian accent at the height of the Cold War, is like, where are the nuclear vessels, and they're like,
why is nobody helping him? Like, it's not like he can talk in a way that is completely it's like, oh, because he's Russian, because like
he's
it comes
Russian.
Out later, right, because they call him a Rusky.
Yeah,
is...
they do.
Also, they do. Such bad security on that naval ship. He just gets up and runs out of the room.
He does. He throws his phaser that isn't working at the guy and then runs the other way and somehow almost escapes an entire nuclear vessel. So that is not...
That could have happened in that thing. That what actually happened, I never could have guessed. He just falls off like and hurts himself real bad. It's like, oh, that's a way to resolve this situation.
So the core of this movie is the stuff with the whale biologist who is only in this Star Trek movie, but she is and they shot this at the Monterey Aquarium. There's no whale thing at Sausalito
because it's too expensive. We've learned this.
There are no whales in captivity. That's just made up. But they have or no humpback whales anyway. But you know that's when they get there and there's the like they're on the tour and then Spock jumps in the thing and does a Vulcan mind meld with the whale and then they pull him out. But the scientist is intrigued, like, you are weirdos and yet like you also know things. And then they end up, she picks them up as like hitchhikers and gives them a ride, and then she has dinner with Kirk and Spock explains that the whale is pregnant, which she doesn't know how he knows that. And like that to me is the core of the movie, because it is these familiar outer space future characters having to explain themselves sort of and sort of not to a person in the present day, and how would that person react? And the answer is she thinks they're weirdos, and yet there's something about them that makes her kind of want to believe them. And I every time I watch this movie, I enjoy that part, which is like, how much does she believe them and how much does she think that they are just crazy people? And how does her belief progress over time?
Didn't like the restaurant scene. It was really weird. But like, I enjoyed the three of them together more than Kirk and the biologist together.
Kirk drinking a Michelob and ordering product placement and ordering a pizza. And that scene...
Their conversation is just strange. Like, the way that they're talking is just like really weird.
It is a little bit weird. Like, it's the... that's the... I'm in Iowa. I only work in outer space. That line makes me laugh, but... I loved that scene as a kid, because it's like, oh my god, Captain Kirk is you're just having dinner with Captain Kirk. What is that about in a pizza place in San Francisco? Mm-hmm. I find it upon rewatching very strange that she calls it Italian, because they just get a pizza. Like, you'd say get pizza, not get Italian. Pizza is Italian, but I don't think you. This is a question for Robot or not. We'll move on. Yes, in hindsight, that scene seems less necessary. Because it gets truncated, right? He immediately is like, "Oh, they're leaving now. Well, we gotta go," and they're out of there. And then Captain Kirk gets dropped off at the park, and he holds. This is another thing I didn't notice at the time. And then he holds the pizza box vertically. It's like, this is a man who's never seen a pizza box before.
That's a nice touch, though. Right? Because why would he
I'm
hold
not
it
sure
horizontally?
It's a touch or not, but it is hilarious to me. Yeah, because it's like he has no idea how pizza works. Does
talking
he
about.
Replicated pizza is all he's ever had.
Horizontal and vertical. The end movie, like the end of the movie where the whales and the probes are talking for way too long. It's just way too long, that part, right? Like,
it does. It does go on a while. They let's show the whole conversation with the whales and the space probe, because we want to. I can see the argument, which is like, well, we can't just have them go boop, and they're like, all right, I'm out of here and disappear, right? Oh, and the answer is, you probably could just like fade away. Like, suffice it to say that they had a conversation at the end. But they're like, no, let's show the whole thing.
When the whale goes vertical, the probe goes vertical. I was like, I don't understand why they feel the need to do that. Like, why is that a thing? But then also, like, the whole
premise. And the probe's really weird, too, because the probe's like a tube with a ball that comes out of it. And it's like, okay, that's really weird. But
is it a ball? I thought it captured Earth, and the Earth was the ball.
Oh, no. I think that's the... No, because it sucks it into itself at the end. Oh, it doesn't do that with the Earth. No, that's just like the probe... transmitter or something. I don't know. I always thought that ball was suspicious.
I also like
gross.
Thought they put in a lot of faith in the whales.
What are the whales? You don't know. Maybe these are jerk whales. Maybe
exactly.
They're going to say the wrong thing. But like, by the way, I was trying to imagine what that conversation is, and it's like, yes, they're hunting us to extinction.
Exactly.
But, but there's only two of us left, right?
They should have gone further in time.
Because the probe, the probe should be like, wait a second, there's only two of you left?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you people?
They should have
but
gone
no,
further
instead, it's
in
like,
time.
Oh, no, it's fine.
To when whales were aplenty, so the whales wouldn't be mad about their existence, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is it? Like, the whale's just like, no, but don't worry, because I'm pregnant. Like, so we're all good? Like,
that's we're right. We're starting a family. There's going to be more whales. Hooray.
We're going to repopulate this entire planet. Hey, team in with whales here. You won't be able to move for whales.
And the probe says, I did not get you a gift. I am sorry.
So
I'll return.
I will
years.
Not destroy your home. Very strange. Also, it's like the presumption that the probe would have been happy anyway about there being whales, you know. But you know, I don't know. Maybe the probe
maybe,
didn't want
maybe
there to
it's
be
looking
any
for
whales.
The whales because it hates them.
Yeah, and it's like just really looking, and it was nearly done, and it would have left. It was like, oh, you got these whales, poof, blow up the whole planet.
Maybe
it's a funny movie in a lot of ways. I did not dislike
that's why
this
I suggested
movie.
It is it's a
so
weird and wacky movie, but it's light and fun, and I think that's one of the great things about it is it is not like other Star Trek movies because it's goofy.
Oh, we have to mention before we wrap up, there is a Mac in this and it's funny.
Yes, that's the big scene. Scotty is given a Mac to talk to.
Mm-hmm. And use a keyboard in the most weird way anybody's ever used a keyboard on film.
Yes. Well, he generates the whole 3D diagrams by typing on a keyboard.
But also just like the way he's typing. Like, I couldn't tell if it was either A, the actor playing Scotty has never used a keyboard before, or
probably
B,
true.
Scotty was supposed to look like he'd never used a keyboard before. But that
also
make
probably
sense.
True.
But that wouldn't make sense because he uses it so proficiently.
But the best part of that about that scene is that is that first off, he talks to the computer, and then Dr. McCoy picks up the mouse and hands it to him. This is the original Mac, right? Yeah. And hands it to him, and he goes, oh, okay. And he says, hello, computer, into the mouse, and that doesn't work either. He says, use the keyboard. It's like, oh, a keyboard, how quaint. And then he goes, tap, 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 and intense, like, 3D diagrams appear somehow, which is hilarious. So that whole scene is very funny. Yeah, and the my favorite part, favorite weird part, people who've listened to me talk about this movie before will know what I'm about to say, which is at some point during this, when they're offering him the secret to transparent aluminum, a lady walks into his office, and he just shouts at her, not now, Madeline, and she walks out. And that's the whole, and on one level, it's like, why is that in there? On another level, it's hilarious. That's why it's in there.
Yeah, this movie is full of little things like that, though. Like why is this happening right now? I guess this is just happening right now. Like,
yep.
You know, why is Spock answering so many questions to those computer screens for so long? And also, like, why
they're testing him to see, like, is he
no, no,
is
no,
his
I
brain
get, no, no,
functioning?
I get what's happening, but it's very long as a scene. Yeah. And
it's
also,
a movie made in the 1980s. It's a much slower paced movie.
I love that, because it's not short, but it's a 2-hour movie, and it's, like, padded out with, like, these things. And also, like, those screens are funny, like, projection screens, right? But as we are behind them, and we can read them, which means they're backwards for him, the words, which is just
maybe
another one of those funny little movie things. But yeah, this is a... Very strange movie. Also, Spock looks older than his dad.
Yes, that is. Well, they weren't that different in age.
I can imagine that. Because so, there is a funny thing of like time, like age and time and how it changed. Because everyone in this movie looks so old, but they're not. But like in this movie, they all look very old.
So the actors who played Spock's parents were in the original series as Spock's parents in one episode. So they brought them back. And this is the only other time for them both to appear. They don't have a scene together. Mark Leonard, who plays Spock's dad, was 7 years older than Leonard Nimoy. So they gray up Mark Leonard, but yeah, it's, I had that same thought every time I watch this movie. I think I have that thought, which is when the original series was on, Mark Leonard played a little bit older and Leonard Nimoy played a little bit younger, and they could swing it. But now that it's 20 years later, they can't. It's much harder for that to do. So yeah, Spock's dad. It's Vulcans. They age differently. Whatever. It's Star Trek, man. Star Trek. I love this movie. We did this for the Incomparable as a Christmas episode because it has those kind of feelings to me. It's just a warm, fun, silly movie. It's escapism and goofy and not serious in the way that most other sci-fi movies are. Like, it's just a silly 80s comedy except with Star Trek. And I like that about that. I wish there were more movies like this that are just fun adventure stuff, but the stakes, you know, there are stakes, but who cares? It's just a goofy movie, and Star Trek did this the one time, and they were successful with it, which is kind of funny. So yeah, there we are, Star Trek 4.